I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Justin Crane. A frequent guest on MSNBC, Justin is a money strategist for business owners. He helps you understand the money side of your business. Justin isn't about cutting back and living a frugal life. Justin is all about getting the shoes, doing sushi, and living the best life today and saving for the future. Justin is the author of the book, Money, You Got This. He shares his everyday crazy funny life stories and gives you a money lesson. Justin is also a certified financial planner professional. He's been featured in CBS, Fox Business News, and MSNBC. Justin, welcome to the show.
David, thanks for having me. It's really exciting for me to be here. I've listened to your show. I love it. I love the guests. I love what you're doing. I'm happy to be here.
Thanks so much, Justin. I'm grateful that you're coming on. You have a very interesting background and niche. We're going to talk about an area that I know a lot of business owners struggle with. So let's get right into it. What prompted you to focus on the numbers, the money side of your business?
Yeah, I think it was the fact that I got divorced about 7 or 8 years ago. It was a very, very hard time for me. Most of my life, I had my like blinders on and I was just like kind of like an ant marching, David. And I really wasn't aware about what was going on. Was I happy? Was I not happy? And I had this big life event that happened to me. And it was very, very hard for me to move on from it and to deal with it and to process it and all that. And I made the decision, because I know a lot of you listening have had struggles in your life, in both whether it's life or business. But at some point, you come to realize that you have to put the oxygen mask on yourself first. You have to take care of yourself first, whatever that is. And I learned to do that, to be aware of what I was thinking, what I wanted, what was best for me and my life. And through doing that, I just started messaging that, okay, I'm putting my own, we'll call it financial oxygen mask on first. I'm going to earn my way out of this. Because when you get divorced, you hit the reset button. And that messaging attracted business owners who were like, okay, my head's in the sand with the money. I know I need to deal with it, but I just don't know how. And from there, I literally started the rest of my life.
And what was the result?
Well, I think the result was being clear on really what I wanted, who I could most help, the sense of feeling of purpose and inspiration. And through that, I started a second line of business, which was money strategy, coaching, and advising to business owners. Because a lot of personal financial advisors, like CFPs, like I'm a CFP, most CFPs will only focus on the personal side of things. The bookkeeper will do a little bit of the data entry on the business side, and the accountant will do the tax planning. But where do you go for financial advice on your business money? Like, there's no profession. No one really does it. It's like this fragmented, weird niche that no one really taps into. And I saw this and I ran with it and I just started the second business and I haven't looked back since.
Now, when you saw it, was this something that you recognized because somebody pointed it out to you, or you had some customers that sort of were in that, you know, in that audience? Or how did you discover it?
Well, I'm sure you know the phrase, you know, deer in the headlights. Like, I'd ask my clients, like, how much money does your business need to make in profits to save, you know, 20 grand for your SEP IRA? You know, or how much cash does your business generate so you can put money away for college? And I would completely get like the poker face, deer in the headlights, like, I don't know. So what I figured out how to do to teach people is that they have to understand the connection between their business money, profits, and cash, and how it ultimately finds its way into the personal side of things. And I got people to understand the connection between the fact that people's business success is going to fund and ignite and basically be the engine to someone's, to their personal goals. So I began to talk about return on life, because I'm a big proponent of that term. It's not just ROI, but it's return on life. So how can we use the success of someone's business to fund what they really want for their life? And once the client knows really what they want for their life, it's so much easier to get your head out of the sand with the numbers, to focus on things, to make decisions, to be proactive, to take control, yada, yada, yada.
Right, right. And also, money's a tool. And there are a lot of components that go into what you want out of life. Money is a very important one. If you don't have the money to support what you want to come out of life, you're going to have a problem.
Yes.
So based on that, for people that have that deer in the headlight look, where should they start?
I start off by telling them that they need to have a glass of wine, that literally it's okay. It's okay if you feel like you're completely overwhelmed and you're stressed out and you don't even know where to start. You don't need to go into the whole internal dialogue of I'm terrible, I'm bad, I have nothing to show for my business, it's always going to be like this. You have to have a glass of wine, a cup of coffee, whatever, and just be like, you know what? I'm not going to gang up on myself. I'm just going to find people who can teach me how to understand some of the numbers in a way that's going to make me feel like, you know what? I got this. I actually can figure this stuff out. It's not as hard as I think it is, because really that's the case. Anyone can do this number stuff. They just have to believe that they can do it. And then the information has to be explained and taught to people in a very, very simple, like paint by numbers way.
So what are some of the resulting conversations that come out of that initial discussion? What do people realize?
That they need to be smarter and more aware of where their money's going. That once they understand where their money's going, their world changes and they can take more control of it. They feel like they're no longer throwing money away. They feel like they have money in the bank so that they can say no to all of the BS that they're really saying yes to because they need the money. They have a plan to pay down debt, whether it's a credit card, a mortgage, or a student loan, or whatever it is. And their values are aligned with their financial life.
So what's a good example or a story of somebody who's gone through this process?
Well, let's go with someone who, like, one of my biggest beliefs is in recurring revenue. So there's a lady who I work with who runs a candle company, and she had problems with inventory, with pricing, with cash, with profits, with investing, everything. So what we started with was we set her up with a bookkeeper, and we had to make sure that the bookkeeper understood how the numbers needed to be displayed. So this lady, we'll call her Jane, could understand the numbers. So number one, she's got wholesale and retail, or if you're a consultant, you might have two lines of business in there as a service provider. But we started just with that one display on her income statement, wholesale, retail. Then we started tracking just two simple things: how much inventory she had and how much money she was paying other people. And as soon as we had those two things, because when you have inventory, it's a sunk cost. You've spent the money and now you have a bunch of stuff in your garage that you could sell. So we focused on what she had. She already spent money on that. And then we created marketing campaigns backed by a little bit of financial planning, like how much should she invest in a Facebook ad or going to a trade show or something like that. And then we came up with a plan for that. And then we started looking at how much money she is spending on people either working for her, like, you know, like a 1099 independent contractor or an employee doing something. And we started seeing, well, where's the ROI? Am I throwing money away with these people? Who's responsible for the ROI? Because sometimes when you pay like an admin, they're not going to make more money for you. They're freeing up your time. So the onus is on you to make more money.
That's
and
right.
Once, so I just started with that. I just started with that concept. And I knew that I was going to go into teaching her about recurring revenue, but I couldn't hit her with that all at once because it would have overwhelmed her. She was a creative. So I had to just start with that. And then once we got our arms around that, now she has one person in her store. She's got one virtual assistant and she knows every month how much inventory she has. Then we got that dialed in. That took like 3 months. And then from there, I introduced the concept of recurring revenue. And I said, you have to invest in things that are going to give you recurring revenue. Because when you have recurring revenue, it's so much easier with cash flow, managing it. You can see, you know, money coming in, you can plan better and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I can go deeper. I mean,
I'd love to hear more about this.
So, okay. Whether it's someone who's a product-based business owner or a service-based business owner, I want to make it apply to everyone. So this lady decided that she wanted to go to a trade show. Now, the trade show, like all in with like flight, hotel, bringing someone, food and all that, was like $4,000, right? And I have this metric that if you're thinking of investing in something, whether you're a product or service, you need to make 3 times your money on it. If you don't think you can make 3 times your money on it, it's not worth the risk that you're taking. Because if you're not going to make that kind of money, your money could be invested somewhere better. And if it doesn't work, then that money gets eaten away by a credit card, you go into debt, and then you go into poverty thinking mode. So this trade show was like, let's just say it was $4,000. So I'm like, Jane, do you think you could make $12,000 off of this trade show? And she was like, you know what? I don't know. And I said, well, if you did make $12,000, how quickly would the money come back? Would it come back in like 2 or 3 months, or would it come back in 10 months? She's like, you know what? Probably 10 months. So for most business owners, they can't carry that investment or can't afford to have that spend for that long because it ties their money up. So we did something a little bit different. We went with something a little bit smaller. We started doing joint ventures in her local market that were cheaper. Like, so she aligned herself with a couple of like real estate companies and marketing companies that would begin to buy her candles and buy them like every month. So we set up like a networking plan for her to go network with some of these local people, which was less money. So let's just say all in, it was $1,000 or $500. So we set up these local mini events where she could go into people's homes and have parties or network with real estate companies or whatever. And they were smaller amounts of money that she spent, $200, $500, $1,000. So if she spends $200 and it doesn't work, she's out $200. But if she spent $4,000 and it doesn't work, that could be half of her monthly expenses. So what I taught her was, and I use this term money floaties, you have to put on your money floaties as a business owner. You have to take small risks all the time. We think we have to be heroes and take huge risks like Richard Branson and all those people, right? But actually, it's about taking small risks, measuring them, seeing how they work, and then iterating off of that and working with the things that are good and stopping the things that aren't.
And it's also a process that takes time is what I'm hearing.
Yes. Right. But you have to do, like, literally people get so overwhelmed about, oh, should I do this? Should I not? Or, you know, it's too much money or blah, blah, blah. Like, you have to think of it as you're investing in your future results.
Yeah. The other thing that I'm hearing you say is, what is it that you can test that's really small? If you're trying something new, what is it you can test that's small so you can get some feedback and see what's going to work before you go big?
Correct. And when you're testing small, that's the money floaties part. What could you test that's small for one time? Like if you hire a publicist, you got to test that for like 8 months. That's recurring testing. I'm talking about a one-time test where you can get feedback and data quickly.
Justin, what's a good example for somebody that has a service-based business like a consultant? Because I know they struggle a lot with issues of...
Well, I'll tell you one that I'm doing.
Time, getting rid of the time for money equation.
Yeah, yeah.
Trying to go from something that's like project-based pricing to recurring revenue, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah. I actually think that, I mean, one thing that I did 2 years ago was to create a group because I was working one-on-one with money strategy and advice, kind of like the example I just gave. And I'm like, you know what? I need some leverage and I want to work with a group. So I started a group. I literally started with 2 women. It was me and 2 women. And I started that, you know, we have a Facebook group and just kept it very, very simple. But I knew that that I was going to have to put myself out there and bring in more people and add to the group. So some examples of some investments that I recently have made, like one that I recently made was I bought the software Contactually. Contactually was, I thought, a great investment for me because it's $40 a month and it allowed me to manage my connections of influencers and peers to stay in front of them. So it's $40 a month or $700 for the year or something like that. And I was like, this is a smart investment for me because it's immediately going to be tied to people who I can connect with that could possibly join my group. And for me, that was something that worked for me. Another investment was literally going to local, like, okay, here's one. Have you ever heard of WeWork, David? There's got to be a WeWork in New York,
oh,
right?
Oh, they're all over the place in New York. They've exploded.
Great. So I've spoken at 3 WeWorks out here in California. And what they do is they do a lunch and learn. So I have to pay for the food and then I go down there and I speak. So the food is like all in, let's say it's $200. So I need to make $600 off the $200 for me to, you know, profit from it. So I'm like, you know what? That's a really good, simple investment. It's $200. I pay for the food. If it doesn't work, I'm out $200. Not like, when I speak, people want these like $10,000 pay to play speaker sponsor fees and all that. I'm like, come on, I'm not writing a check for 10 grand. And if it doesn't work, people do that. I'm like, I'd rather do 200 and see how it goes. And then I could go national if I wanted to with WeWork, which I plan to do.
Those are great examples. So speaking of groups versus individual work, what are your thoughts about when, if you're the consumer and you're hiring somebody like you who is in the advisory role, when do you think it's better to hire somebody who is going to be an individual coach? When do you think it's better to be in a group? Are there advantages to starting your own group without an expert where you're just interacting with peers? What are your thoughts about all this?
Well, I think the best way to do it is to hire someone and get some one-on-one time with them. Could be one call, two calls, three calls, something like that. Have them get to know you if they're going to be a coach or an advisor or something like that. Have them give you some working points on what it is that you need to do for your business for the next 12 months or 3 months or whatever it is. And then they can bring you into the group. I think it's important to get to know who you're going to be working with and what are some specific areas of focus for you. And then once you get into the group, the coach knows you, and then it becomes more communal where, you know, everyone kind of is working on their stuff and you can feed off of one another and learn from one another and all that.
Now, do you think it makes a difference whether the area of focus of the group is something very specific, like money management for your business, or if you're looking for just improving your rate of success and you may have different areas that are troubling you at different times, is there some other way to get help in a group format?
There is, but I think what we're really talking about is like everyone kind of knows what they need to do. And plus you could Google it. I mean, like you could Google like how to do this or how to do that. It's all there. All of the information is there. Where people get tripped up on is applying it. And then the most important thing is accountability. It is the most important thing. How are you going to hold yourself accountable? And who is going to hold yourself accountable besides you? So if you're going to join a free group, someone has to be the person that's going to hold you accountable besides you. Most of the time, you need to pay someone to do that. But maybe someone can, you know, have a free group and do that. But like my group is paid and I have someone specific in the group that is holding everyone accountable to what they say they're going to do. Accountability is big. I mean, we could talk about that for a day.
Well, let's talk about it for a couple of minutes. Why is accountability so important? And why do you think it's better if somebody is paying to get somebody else to hold them accountable?
I think accountability is important because what we are wired to do is stay the same and not change. We really, really want to change, but our ego is keeping us where we are. Our ego is keeping us comfortable. And we all know the definition of insanity, right? Doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. Well, somehow we're resisting taking action and doing some of the change work. It could be fear of success. How are people? For me, it was fear of success. It was fear of being judged and criticized. That was my inner talk, if you will, and having to work through that. But the accountability part will force you to basically put on your oxygen mask and really, really think about what you want and force you to take a look at what you're doing and see other people in the group who are taking action, just little actions, having small wins, and you can be like, you know what? I got this. I can do it.
And just to push a little further, why can't you just find some colleagues where you agree you're going to hold one another accountable?
You can do that. You totally can.
Okay.
You can, but there needs to be a level of commitment. Mm-hmm. And what I found, like I started my group 2 years ago, and like I didn't even like realize this. The group becomes a community, and it evolves over time. And the person that's running the community becomes a little bit like chopped liver. Like literally, I'm facilitating things, but the group has taken on its own identity. They've all connected with one another and feel like they're in it together. And it's not just them that are having these problems, that they can bounce ideas off of other people. I never realized the sense of human connection in a group. I just never thought of that.
Yeah, no, it's really
powerful.
Beautiful
thing.
It's very powerful. One other question about getting help, particularly from people who call themselves coaches. Now, you have a particular specialty where you help people around the issue of money, and you have certification. Nowadays, there seems to be an explosion of people who call themselves coaches, business coaches, and frankly, coaches in like every sector. If you know that you're struggling with your business, when do you think it's appropriate to get somebody to coach you? And in particular, are there certain kinds of coaches that you should look for?
As soon as you're aware that you think you need help, you should get help. That's number one. Are there certain kinds of coaches? I don't know, but like, I agree with what you're saying, David. I think that there are a lot of coaches out there. I mean, I call myself kind of like, when I talk to people, like I am the anti-fluff money strategy. Like I'm a CFP. I manage $100 million. Like I got all the credentials and all that. But I believe that there are so many coaches out there that basically tell you, everything is going to be fine. We're all going to sail off in a white unicorn eating strawberry ice cream in a yoga position, and everything is going to be fine. We're going to sail off into the sunset and eat strawberry champagne, caviar, yogurt. I'm like, no, you got to do some of the work. And the content from the advisors and coaches needs to be really, really good. So that was my mini rant. Mm-hmm. I think some people are good, but I think some people are complete like smoke and mirrors, total house of cards. And I actually think that what people need to think about to discern whether someone's good or not is you need to trust your intuition, and you need to maybe get some references. Everyone is going to have one of these sales pages with testimonials of five people that made $4 billion with them. But you really have to dig a little bit deeper. And I also think, I mean, actually, I talk about this in just if you're thinking about hiring a financial advisor, it's not about the questions that you ask the advisor. It's about the questions that they ask you. That one distinction is, what are they asking you? How interested are they in you? Do you feel that they're interested in you or just your money?
Well, aren't a lot of the questions from financial advisors very formulaic? Don't many get taught sales techniques where they're going through some list of kind of a standard template of questions?
Yeah, but they're really looking for the money. How much money do you have to invest? And blah, blah, blah. You know, and I think a lot of coaches out there on the coaching side, they really need a way to understand what the client is trying to achieve and whether they're a good fit for them and all of that. I think it needs to be more about the client and less about the advisor or the coach.
Good advice.
What do you think, David?
Yeah, I've talked to people who are coaches who are very salesy. And in the interaction between me and the coach, 90% of the discussion is on the coach's side. And that's pointing out exactly what you just described, which is how interested are they in you and what are they asking you? So if they're the ones that are asking the questions, they should be talking 10% of the time, not 90% of the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right? Questions are very powerful, and listening is very powerful.
Yeah, you're right. And I think a lot of people who've come to me have lost money on these other coaches. You know, they spent 10, 20 grand on these coaches. And not to say that that's no coach isn't worth it, but they haven't gotten the return And now they're back to square one, and they're even way more gun shy about what to do, and they're scared.
Yeah, I've seen the same thing. So now let's talk about success. Justin, whom do you know personally who's done a really remarkable job at smashing a plateau?
I'm going to say my wife. My wife, and it's really a working woman, so to speak. We have a blended family. We have, you know, I have two from a prior marriage, one from my wife's prior marriage. And I just think the concept of what she does, driving an hour each way to work, being a mucky muck exec at a high-powered company, dealing with blending our family, helping out on the financial side, providing for her kid, and keeping it all together is really, really big. I think it has to be because we just celebrated Father's Day yesterday, and it was a day for me, but it made me realize, you know, how strong she is and really how strong a working woman is who has kids, because I think that's it's very, very hard to do. So I could give you that answer, or I can give you someone in business as well, but she was the first one that came to my mind.
It's a great answer, and it's very true. It's complicated to be a parent. It's complicated to be a parent in a blended family. The working world is complicated. It's changed so much just in the last 10 years, the way people work, the way people interact, the way people communicate, all these devices that we have make communication so much more complicated. Yeah, the world seems to be getting more complex every day. And the basic challenges are still the same. We all want to live a good life and be successful. So that's a great example. And Justin, what can we look forward to from you in the near future? What's coming up for you?
You know, what's great about this year is that this is such a funny answer. Nothing. I have nothing big coming up. And I'm so psyched to say that because last year I had a big book launch and I did all that. And this year it's about doing the little things, focusing on one thing at a time and just iterating and improving all parts of my business. So I've freed up the space to be able to make my existing stuff better.
That's terrific. It's just a great answer. I love it.
Thank you. Thank you.
So how can listeners learn more about you and follow you?
Well, they can. I think what they can do is they can go to this URL. They can go to cashflowgift.com. It's one word, cashflowgift.com. And in there is a guide that talks about how do you make sense of all of this financial stuff for the money side of your business. Profits, cash, clarity, intention, stuff like that.
Great. Well, we'll put that in the show notes. Justin, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. It's been a great discussion. An area that I think a lot of people don't want to focus on that much, and you did it in a way that makes it sound doable and easy. So I'm really grateful that you took some time to come on the show and talk to our listeners about your area of specialty.
Thanks, David. It was great to be here.
My guest today has been Justin Crane, CFP and Money Strategist for Business Owners. Thank you again, Justin, for joining us. Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions, where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.